County saw a surge in suspected overdose deaths over the Memorial Day holiday weekend. What could a new approach to care mean for addiction treatment and overdose prevention? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview to talk about this are Hamilton County Public Health Medical Director, Dr. Steve Fagans, University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Associate Professor of Medicine, Dr. Michael Binder, and UC College of Medicine Chief Resident Physician, Ellen Jokum. Thank you all for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Dr. Fagans, Hamilton County has been watching overdose deaths trend down, but there was this spike in deaths in May. Have you been able to find a link in those, with those deaths or a cause of all that?
So you probably heard that we put out, in conjunction with the Hamilton County Office of Addiction Response in the coroner's office, an alert. That alert occurred on Wednesday after Memorial Day holiday. And so from Friday, May the 22nd through Tuesday, May the 26th, there were 12 overdose deaths. That's associated with also 5 overdose-related emergency department visits. And what we monitor are not just from the coroner's office overdose deaths, but also chief complaints of all the emergency departments. When a statistical anomaly occurs, we all meet, we decide, and we put out an alert. And so that occurred. The biggest reason for doing that is there a change in the drug supply? Is there something that we need to look at? We look at which emergency departments, where they occurred, and including the toxicology reports from the coroner's office. It's always assumed, at least in recent years, that there's probably a fentanyl component or a type of fentanyl as well as other types of opioids, metamidine, xylazine, other things associated with that. Also a need for more naloxone or Narcan for first responders as well as community members.
Mm-hmm. So was there a specific one of those drugs found that connected all these overdose deaths, or is that still under study?
So the coroner does a very thorough job, and it takes months before you know what the toxicology will show. There are samples related to seized drugs, the test. Right now, we run over 52, 53% fentanyl, all kinds of other components, metamidine, 6 or 7% as well, and other adulterants, including nitazenes, which are xylazine is one of those. Nothing stands out, but the toxicology will be months before it returns.
I know Indiana announced in April that a new synthetic opioid called cyclorphine, I think I'm saying that right, had been found in the Midwest. Has that shown up locally, Dr. Fagans, as far as you're aware?
Have not heard that. It's one reason why toxicology takes so long is because they test for everything that we know about and we may know about. So we could very well see that, and that could be part of what occurred this particular quarter, but we wouldn't know that until several months down the road. If you, by the way, if you look at, is this 12 number is a significantly increase. If we've had 42 deaths occur in the first quarter of this year, and there were 46 overdose deaths in the first quarter of last year. So we're roughly similar year to year.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Binder, addiction or substance use disorder obviously can be life or death. We've just been talking about all these fatal overdoses. Why is it important for treatment to be part of primary care?
Well, these are common conditions. We know that addictions are widespread, yet undertreated. And when treatment happens, oftentimes it's in clinics that are like siloed or where they're only getting addiction treatment and not taking care of other medical problems. And so sometimes patients who go to their primary care doctors don't feel comfortable sharing that due to stigma or shame. And so one of the things that we did at UC recently is start a clinic where we integrated addiction treatment into the primary care clinic, both to increase access for patients and also to give physicians in training hands-on training to take care of patients with addictions.
Yeah. So, Dr. Jokum, how much instruction do medical school students typically get related to addiction treatment?
Not enough, I would say. And I don't want to speak as a generalization. I did not attend all medical schools.
Sure, that's fair. It would be impossible to attend all medical schools,
But I do think it's a pretty united front that most medical students feel is that substance use treatment, diagnosis, harm reduction strategies are not super well taught. I did graduate medical school now at this point, like 4 years ago. And I do think with each year, there is an improvement in this education. So classes now might be getting much more developed curriculum on this than I got in my day. But I do think there's still a lot of room to grow. And I think that extends to residency programs as well, especially for physicians that will be able to have those conversations about substance use in patients' lives, which is truly all physicians of any kind. But I do think people who practice in like primary care settings especially have that exposure.
We're talking in this recorded interview about a clinic that makes addiction care part of primary care. Dr. Binder, tell us more about the clinic. It offers treatment for substance use disorders as part of primary care. How long has it been around? Just tell us how it works.
Sure. We started in 2023, so we've been open for about 2.5 years, and we're located in the Hawksworth Clinic as part of the UC Medical Center within a primary care setting. And we started this clinic to really address those problems as a team aspect where, you know, it, made up of physicians, pharmacists, social workers, nurses, and medical assistants. And we did this within a primary care setting.
Okay. And why? I mean, that sounds like a real team approach. What made you all think this had to be integrated into a primary care setting?
Well, we know that addictions affect not just the brain, but other organ systems as well. So for somebody that comes in with a history of opioid addiction, they're at higher risk for having certain infectious diseases like hepatitis C. And they have other medical, they may have other medical problems as well that need not just their addiction treated, but a good primary care.
Yeah. And you said that these disorders are so common. So it wouldn't make sense to silo addiction treatment when so many people are struggling with this.
And this is a chronic medical condition, and we treat these with the same philosophy that we do other chronic medical conditions like asthma or hypertension, assessing them, getting them on an evidence-based treatment. And patients with addictions do really well when they're in treatment.
Yeah. Dr. Jochum, you took part in this clinic as chief resident physician. Talk about the kinds of patients you saw and what you learned there without giving away anybody's, you know, confidential information or anything like that. But to talk to us about some of that.
Yeah, it was truly an incredible experience. I was fortunate to get to work with them starting from kind of the get-go of their clinic. And I think, again, as mentioned, we don't get much training beyond like the book aspect of substance use and addiction and how to manage that. And so it was truly eye-opening. We got to work with Dr. Carolyn Chan, Dr. Michael Binder here, who are just excellent in learning skills, seeing patients, again, from all walks of life, because addiction is anybody can have it, and learning how to have those conversations, to learn how to diagnose it, how to approach it in a stigma-free environment, which is hard for these patients, and they don't always get to experience that. And then learning how to have conversations and gain the knowledge to know what treatment options exist for them, what makes the most sense for them, how to have conversations for them to make the choice that best suits their goals. All of which are things, again, I could tell you coming out of medical school and residency otherwise, what are the medications we use for alcohol use disorder and opioid use disorder? But actually like prescribing it and actually knowing how to monitor for it, how to talk to patients about it is like a very different situation. And I was very grateful to have this. And now as someone who will be going into primary care in a couple of weeks, very excited and grateful that I have these skills to take forward into my practice.
Dr. Jochum and Dr. Binder, I want to get both your thoughts. I'll start with you, Dr. Jochum. How much a part of that, this work, is learning the best way to communicate with patients? You mentioned that this can be a sensitive topic. There can be lots of stigma attached to it. How big a part of communication is all this?
I think huge. I think, like Dr. Binder mentioned, a lot of patients can face a lot of stigma from healthcare providers and family and friends. I mean, everybody in life, they can be treated in ways that are not fair to them. And so I think even just coming at it from like a compassionate, open-minded approach can mean a lot. But there is a lot that goes into making a diagnosis of do they use substances or do they have substance use disorder? And what is the severity? What is the best approach to treat them? And so some of those conversations can be really delicate. And it's important that they have someone that they can trust. So yeah, I think communication is huge.
Yeah. Can you speak to that, Dr. Binder? I mean,
I think Dr. Joker made a good point about trust, and that starts when the patient walks through the door, when they check in. We want to welcome them with open arms and make them feel very comfortable. We want to understand why they came to the clinic. Do they want to, what are their goals, and really work with them over time to help them achieve those goals. And that's done really oftentimes through communication, making them feel comfortable, and sometimes counseling, oftentimes medications.
How do you, Dr. Binder, this is something Dr. Joachim just brought up, but how do you determine that line between using substances and having substance use disorder?
It's an important distinction, and many people who use substances don't meet those criteria. Most people who use substances, most people who use substances in the United States, we were talking about caffeine or alcohol or other things. When somebody has a substance use disorder, that means they're using the substance in a way that impacts their life in a negative way. And we use a specific criteria called the DSM criteria. And that's made up of 11 criteria for substance use disorder, and oftentimes involves things like cravings, patients unable to stop on their own, unable to cut back. It's impacting their family and potential occupational situation in a negative way. And there are other criteria as well.
Yeah. Dr. Feggins, we were just talking about the importance of communication in this primary care clinic that Dr. Joachim was involved in, that Dr. Binder's involved in. How important are those frank discussions when it comes to the public health aspect of this work? I'm thinking like being able to tell people, hey, if you're going to use, make sure somebody else is there, have testing strips, have naloxone, you know, how, talk about the importance of that kind of communication.
Yeah, so we put out our alerts. We also talk about a number that you can call to get naloxone. You can get free naloxone from any health department, especially Hamilton County Public Health. There's a number you call, we'll come to you. There's also a number that you can call that actually is the central connect that will get you to a treatment provider that will help you get on Medicaid, that will help you. And you know, if we talk about in 2017, there were 528 overdose deaths in Hamilton County. Last year, data's not totally there, 151.
Wow.
Last year, 2025, was the first year that we had under 200 overdose deaths in Hamilton County. What do you attribute that to? Well, really an all-of-county effort, not just local government, public health, an array of very good addiction treatment providers. And over time, and during that time, the very medicine that we're speaking of today could only be prescribed by certain physicians with a certain license and maybe no more than 50 or 100 patients. And that has all changed. And so as we've moved to where our addiction treatment providers are more comfortable with not just one substance, but multiple substance, we don't speak of it as substance use, we don't call it addicts or addiction. We call it substance use disorder. And when you're being treated, your substance use disorder in remission, just like your cancer in remission or whatever in remission, like anything else, relaxing, remitting can occur. And so as this sort of mainlining of the ability to treat opioid use or substance use disorder, like any chronic condition, it allows for the very things that are being spoken of here. And so our addiction treatment providers get comfortable with multiple substances, but not multiple chronic illnesses. And the biggest increase in those who are either overdose or with substance use is age over 45. Mm-hmm. So it pulls right into the internal medicine or the primary care practice, and where you're not just dealing with multiple chronic conditions, you're comfortable with that, you can deal with this chronic condition, and you can understand that like anything else, it relaxes and remits, just like diabetes.
Mm. So you just talked about those numbers and that huge drop from, you know, the starting point that you gave to where we were last year. How big a role has communication played in that, just educating the public and educating healthcare providers?
Well, you know, before the pandemic, this was our pandemic. And in fact, we spent so much time doing just as you described, talking with not just the public, but law enforcement, turning it into a crime to a treatable illness. Yes, there's criminal things involved. Turning it in from you're a bunch of addicts to you have an illness that we can work with you. Really changing the minds, not just of the public, but of those with the illness themselves. And finding that and continuing to work with you until you're ready to go to that rehab, to go to that clinic. And now that it's much more available and even really becomes a primary care type of activity, that all adds plays into that significant reduction. 151 is still too many, but that's huge.
Yeah. Dr. Binder, do you find that people with substance use disorder have a hard time thinking of themselves in that way? I mean, are they still thinking of myself as I'm an addict, I'm an alcoholic, whatever? Is it hard for them to make that jump sometimes?
Sometimes it is, and that's part of the process we have with communication is we talk about when they come in, what a substance use disorder is, how that impacts the brain, how that impacts their decision-making capacity. And you mentioned sometimes people have stigma around their own condition for themselves, not just others towards them. They've internalized that. And it's one of the things that we educate patients about, and it can really help them get on board with treatment when they understand, oh, this is something that has impacted my brain, and there's treatment that can help me get better.
Yeah. What are the diagnoses you're seeing most often in the clinic? Are these patients using opioids, or are many of them using other types of substances?
Our referrals come from within Hawksworth practice at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. So there's about 16,000 primary care patients within those clinics. And most of our referrals are for patients with opioid use disorder. And initially when we started the clinic, we were taking care, we took referrals for patients with opioid use disorder and alcohol use disorder. And soon we found patients also needed help with stimulant use disorder and other substance use disorders. So, the two main conditions that we see most often would be patients with opioid use disorder and alcohol use disorder.
Yeah. Dr. Binder, you talked about how common substance use disorder is in the U.S.
The number that was quoted in the article was about over 45 million Americans made a diagnosis for substance use disorder,
I believe. So a lot of people. How many people actually get treatment for it? If there are 45 million people who have it, how many people are getting the treatment they need?
There are various estimates, but I've seen figures less than 20% of those people with substance use disorder are in treatment.
Yeah. Dr. Jochim, you talked about what you learned through this experience in the clinic. What kind of impact do you think that will have on the way you treat patients moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think I learned a lot of really helpful communication skills, which was great for patients with substance use disorder, but really for any chronic condition, great skills to for communication there. So that in general, very helpful. But I think just the confidence that you gain from seeing this and learning from the experts. So now I feel comfortable in my soon-to-be primary care practice having these conversations with patients. Like Dr. Binder mentioned, you know, how so few patients who might suffer from substance use disorder getting treatment. And there's so many factors that go into that. But one of them is getting to a doctor for anyone can be really hard. And so I think the fewer barriers that exist to getting them to a doctor who can help with the concerns that they have is the best option. So if you have more primary care doctors who feel comfortable having those conversations and starting treatment, I think that could hopefully be groundbreaking for access to care for these patients. Mm-hmm. So I just, the comfort and confidence in treating.
Yeah. Dr. Binder, what impact do you think this clinic's model could have for the future of addiction care? Is this a model that could be replicated?
We think so. You know, most, as we talked about earlier, in med school, there are didactic lectures or lectures where students are learning, but they're not getting the hands-on training. And so that impacts their future practice. They haven't had those that ability to take care of a patient, maybe hands-on. And so with this practice, we have all internal medicine residents at UC rotate through this. they feel comfortable being able to take care of patients. They've increased confidence in being able to take care of patients with substance use disorders. And we think this is scalable to other residency programs.
Yeah. Dr. Fagans, what could more care like this mean for the public health crisis of addiction?
Yeah, and I want to say this work builds on work that has gone for a number of years in the university's emergency department that has really expanded to all our emergency departments for, I'd say, 3-4 years. Dr. Ryan and others, where the beginning, someone comes, that's where they come. It's the emergency department. Are you ready to make that change? They can begin and then do what's called a warm handoff or just collegiality to an addiction treatment provider. In this case, they can do that same warm handoff to a primary care provider. So it really builds on a lot of work that has progressed in this area. We have really led, not just the county, the nation, in this work. And this is an extension of that.
Yeah. And so you think this will just continue to help drive those numbers down in terms of overdose deaths?
Well, you know, folks with various chronic diseases can be challenging in many ways. Folks with substance use disorders can be extra challenging in many ways. And it's a relapsing, remitting type of thing. And as long as you have at least a place you can go, a place you can talk to, even if you relapse, you know you can come back. And so that should help us to continue to move those numbers down by having not just the graduate medical education clinics, but the primary care of our community being comfortable with this as one of the many chronic diseases that they care for.
Well, I've been talking with University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Associate Professor of Medicine, Dr. Michael Binder, UC College of Medicine Chief Resident Physician, Dr. Ellen Jokum, and Hamilton County Public Health Medical Director, Dr. Steve Fagans. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is Stephen Baum. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.